Mazzara and Parra project to Amimora. Herrera, Cabrera, don't let the Bay that scare ya. Machado or Bono or Nolan Garantano.
We'll teach you how to win Rondo. Start, sit, and drop, and all you need to know. Outlaws, Rick Porcello. Now let's get on with the show.
It is December 6th, the Tuesday afternoon, and we are very excited to talk baseball because crazy things are happening around Major League Baseball. It's Adam Azer with Heath Cummings and Chris Sowers. Mr. Scott White is homesick today. No doubt, guys, Scott is very jealous right now. I'm sure he would love to be on this podcast. This is a fun time.
Yeah, Scott White right now is just sitting at home, sick as a dog, rocking back and forth, talking to himself about Chris Sale.
Yeah, Chris Sale to the Red Sox right before we went on the air.
Chris Sale's very happy with the White Sox right now. Or Scott is.
Okay.
Scott thinks you should always trade your best players.
Yes.
If you can't re-sign them.
Yes.
Well, he's got a point, right?
In some cases, yes.
Yeah.
For the White Sox, I think, definitely. For the Pirates, I question it.
I also question your evaluation of Scott. I bet if Scott were here, he'd disagree with what you just
said. No,
no. We had this. This is a discussion we had the other day, and he said that if you have a star player who is a year away from free agency, or 2 years away from free agency, you should almost always trade him.
Well, what if you're a good team? Is
doesn't
that
matter
only for bad teams?
Doesn't matter.
Really?
It doesn't matter because that way you never have a window that's closed.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if you ever have a window that's open either. But he doesn't he gets really frustrated when teams talk about how their window, like the Royals right now, their window is closing. Or a certain team has got 1-2 years left in their window. Scott doesn't think that really exists if you manage teams the right way.
Mm. Okay, well, I look forward to taking Scott up to task on that one. We're supposed to do two shows this week to make up for some lost time last week, so we're going to do our best there. Let's talk about Chris Sale. We're going to talk about Sale, Segura, Cespedes, Beltran, Reddick, Jaime Garcia, Melanson, Rich Hill, Derek Norris, Volquez, Matt Holliday, Steve Pierce, Joaquin Benoit, Tyler Thornburg, Travis Shaw. We're going to try to get to as much as we can here. We're going to read your emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Also, a new collective bargaining agreement has been agreed upon, and there are some quirky, kind of fun things in there that we can talk about. But fantasy angle for Chris Sale. Let's start with him. Oh, value up, down, or the same for Sale?
It's really difficult for it to move, and I don't think it does. I just wrote about 500 words, and then at the end it was kind of like a shrug emoji because...
You should have put the shruggy.
That's all I should have done was just shrug emoji.
His name is Shruggy.
The benefit is Chris Sale just set a career high with 17 wins, and now he's going to a team that made Rick Porcello a 22-game winner. So I think there's a decent chance he sets another career high. He's going to pitch more games in bad pitcher's parks. I don't know that he's necessarily going to face a more difficult schedule in terms of offense, because if you look at the AL Central and the AL East, and you take out the two teams that Sale would have pitched for, those two offenses are basically the same. Or those two leagues are basically the same.
Whoa, really? You think so?
Well, the Indians were the second best offense in the American League.
Uh-huh.
The Red Sox were the best.
The Royals are better than the Rays. The Twins were better offensively than the Yankees.
You would expect the Yankees to be better offensively this year than they were last year. Like, they traded Beltran midseason. They didn't have Gary Sanchez for the full season.
But the Orioles were better than both of those teams.
The right? Orioles were, but they were worse than the Tigers.
Hmm.
And the Blue Jays were worse than the Indians. So pretty much across the board, the AL Central team was better.
I think that going to the American League East is really tough, but not having to face Boston is great.
The Blue Jays may not be that good offensively anymore.
That's a great point. Yeah, looking at their lineup, because I think Steve Pierce is pretty interesting. Well, we could talk about him later, but yeah, the Blue Jays may not have a juggernaut lineup, that's for sure.
One concern might be, we saw the pitch to contact Chris Sale last year a little bit.
Kind of.
He struck out less than he ever has in his career.
Yeah, but I think his strikeout rate was pretty much exactly where it had been after the All-Star break.
He struck out 11 again per 9?
Yep.
if he goes back to that, then I don't think there's any concern. But generally, full season stats are more predictive than second half stats. Mm-hmm. So we'll just have to see.
Chris Sale was the number 7 starting pitcher in points leagues, number 9 in rotisserie leagues last year. He had a 1.04 whip, and you know his ERA is sometimes on the high side, 3.33 last year, I believe. So I will give you some names. You tell me, would you rather have Chris Sale or Madison Bumgarner?
Probably Bumgarner.
You're gonna have to not say probably pretty soon.
Yeah.
You're going to have to actually have an answer.
Once I'm not trying to juggle 3 sports, I will actually have baseball rankings. Spoiler alert.
Mad Bum.
Okay, how about John Lester, who was better than Chris Sale in fantasy last year, or Sale?
I would rather have Sale.
Sale.
Verlander or Sale?
Sale.
Sale.
Kluber or Sale?
Sale.
Whoa.
I mean, they're both aces, but I would rather have Sale.
Did Chris answer?
Yeah, I mean, you're probably Sale.
What are the other moving parts here?
I wrote about the prospects. Probably wrote too much, according to Heath. but I think it's good news for Yoan Moncada. The White Sox received a package of Yoan Moncada, who is probably the best prospect in baseball, right?
Possibly.
They also received a very hard-throwing right-handed pitcher, whose name is Michael Kopech.
Yep.
Ken Rosenthal said he throws 105 miles an hour. I'm going to go ahead and say Ken Rosenthal needs to show some receipts for that. Because he definitely doesn't throw 105 miles an hour. And then they got two guys who may be in high A next year, and one of them looks like a reliever. But Yoan Moncada and Kopech are the headliners. And Moncada, I think this is definitely good news for him.
Do you think he has a chance to break spring training with them beyond their opening day roster?
He has a much better chance of doing that than he did with the Red Sox. I would say 50%. Maybe that's high.
I think Moncada was going around round 9 or 10 or so in our drafts, or is that a little early? Maybe like round 12.
Prospect, we tend to get overexcited about prospects, but I would say there's a much better chance that he provides a return on investment on that price in Chicago than he would have in Boston. Because you look at Boston, they basically had to teach him how to play third base in a crash course over the last few weeks he was in AAA, because there's just nowhere else for him to play. He's not going to play at second base in Boston. He wasn't going to play in the outfield. In Chicago, not quite an issue. He could play at second base. He could play at third base. He could play in the outfield. Any place that he's capable of playing,
that's the key
they could
word.
Have a spot for him.
That's the key word, that he's capable of playing. The Red Sox didn't think Moncada was ready
yet.
And there's pretty good reason to think he's not ready. I mean, he's 21 years old, and he's got 220 plate appearances above high A. Most players, with no matter how good a prospect they are, aren't ready at that point. And the White Sox have no reason to rush him. I see zero reason that he would come up before June. Just because why do you want to waste that year of eligibility on a team not going to be any good?
I guess it depends. His service clock has already started because of...
But that was September, right?
Okay, so his service clock hasn't started.
I think I don't see any reason on a bad team you bring him up until June at the earliest, and there's no reason to think for sure that he's ready yet.
Well, yes and no. He hasn't seen AAA. He's only had 227 plate appearances above high A, but he did have a .254 slugging percentage at AA. He was one of the youngest players in his league. He had a .910 OPS.
That was very good.
The strikeout rate was high, yes, but...
You said he could have a 30-60 season at some point in the future.
That is his ceiling.
He had a 30-60 season last year. He struck out 30% of the time in AA and 60% of the time in the majors.
Nobody has ever been more proud of their terrible joke.
That is the best. That's a fantastic joke.
Pretty mean there, but no, Moncada really struggled when he came up. He batted .211. He only had 19 at-bats, but he struck out 12 times, so... you know, we'll see what happens there. And I think Red Sox rotation is pretty interesting here because they got Drew Pomeranz, Clay Buchholz, Eduardo Rodriguez, Stephen Wright, and there are only two spots for those four guys. You would like to see Pomeranz have one of them. And personally, I would like to see Eduardo Rodriguez have the other, but I think there's going to be let's give Stephen Wright credit for being really good for half a year. Let's give Buchholz credit for turning it around kind of late in the year a little bit. There are going to be some fantasy relevant pitchers that are not in the rotation, at least in deeper leagues.
I would assume Rodriguez is looking or on the outside looking in right now.
You think so?
Maybe not.
Okay.
Maybe that's just my negative feelings about him.
I thought he pitched pretty well down the stretch. RosterResorts.com has him in the rotation. That doesn't mean anything right now.
I'll just point out if the 2016 Los Angeles Dodgers taught us anything, is that there's no such thing as too many starting pitchers.
That is true. So this is exciting for baseball fans. It doesn't really change much for fantasy owners. I mean, just look at David Price and when he went to the Blue Jays, for example, and he had bad numbers in Rogers Center and he gave up some fly balls and he was great on the Blue Jays. So great pitchers are going to pitch really well, and it's not like Sale's been in a pitcher's haven with the White Sox.
Yeah.
Good fun stuff around baseball. Not so fantasy relevant necessarily it's fantasy relevant. It doesn't necessarily change much for fantasy owners. I got to tell everybody about something real quick here. If you're a football fan, NFL on CBS games, they're now available to stream on CBS All Access. You can watch your live local market CBS games on your computer, your tablet, or your connected device. If you want to learn more, go to cbssports.com/NFL to try it free for 1 week. So an opportunity to watch a game online for free, not something you can do very often with the NFL. Go to cbssports.com/NFL, CBS All Access. They are streaming live local market games this week. I've got a stat of the day for you.
Yeah.
Steve Pierce going to the Blue Jays. Last year at the Rogers Center, he had an 1843 OPS, which would have led baseball history in two games. So how about that? He is a stud in Toronto.
I mean, this is clearly the biggest news ever. I mean, 1843, that's eat your heart out, Barry Bonds.
Yeah, it's pretty good. But in all seriousness, I do wonder if Steve Pierce is one of the biggest off-season winners right now.
Well, I honestly don't have any idea if Steve Pierce is good.
I think it's just that if they don't re-sign Bautista, if they don't re-sign Encarnacion, he could be an everyday player. When Pierce has been good in 2014 and 16, he's been amazing against lefties. So you figure he at least plays against lefties. I think he's got a chance to get some more bats.
He's kind of just Ryan Rayburn, right?
I don't know. He is really tricky. Man, he's been so bad at times, but also so consistently good for stretches.
And you know what would be awesome?
What?
Is if he was second base eligible.
Is he not?
He's not going to be. He played 14 games last year.
Oh.
And they gave him 2 years, $14
million? I'm not sure.
Because that's probably borderline. Like you could spend that on a bench player.
Yes.
Oh, you could. Oh, yeah.
I think
2 years at $12.5 million.
Yeah. I don't know that he's probably playing every day.
Yeah.
He would probably have to earn it. Maybe like someone like like Chris Colabello did when he was with the Blue Jays.
Well, I don't think we want him to earn it that way.
Well, sure.
Well, there was a time last season when Steve Pierce was a must-add, must-own player. It didn't last all that long, and then he had forearm surgery in September. Yep. So you tell me, who's the biggest winner right now over the last 2 weeks, fantasy winner?
In the words of one of probably your favorite movies, Shaw. Travis Shaw.
Oh.
Going to Milwaukee, one of the best parks in baseball. I think the best home run park in baseball for left-handed hitters. Sounds like he's going to get to play third base every day, at least at the start of the year. This could be huge for him. He could be a 30 home run guy. He's not the most high profile by any means. He's not a definite top 12 third baseman, but I think he's the guy that had his value increased the most.
Yeah. He's a guy, though. Is he good?
He's good enough to be good in Milwaukee. Remember Adam Lind?
He played in Boston.
You remember Adam Lind?
I remember.
Yeah, Boston is not a good park for left-handed hitters.
Okay.
That's the thing that people, like, Boston's great for righties because of the monster, but it's huge the other way.
He does have a career 656 away OPS.
Yeah.
So, I mean, clearly the biggest winner is Eric Thames, unless you play in a KBO league, in which case he's clearly the biggest loser.
Yeah. Eric Thames could be draftable.
I think he's definitely draftable. I would probably draft him ahead of Travis Shaw.
I forgot about that Eric Thames one. So I refresh my memory. Eric Thames coming over from Japan, right?
Korea.
Okay. Going to the Brewers?
Yes.
To replace Chris
Cardis. That's actually, look, you're talking about an all or nothing power hitter who was okay in the very brief times that he got into the majors, 21 homers and 684 plate appearances, 727 OPS, but only over 2 years. Look, he's probably not going to be good, but I think he could be maybe a diet Chris Carter with a little better batting average.
You're not really drafting him ahead of Travis Shaw. Like, that was a joke.
I don't know why not.
Travis Shaw's been pretty bad, man. Like,
yeah, like Travis Shaw's had like, he had a good month last year and was miserable.
He's been good much more recently than Eric Thames.
Well, depends. Eric Thames won a KBO MVP.
And he's,
has Travis Shaw ever won an MVP?
I'm sure Travis Shaw has won an MVP. Anyway, we're arguing which left-handed Brewer is the biggest impact so far.
Look, it hasn't been a great start to free agency for fantasy, I would say.
Well, I think Matt Holliday is a winner. I don't think he's a huge winner, but
yeah.
I like him going to Yankee Stadium. I like him DHing. I think that's basically what it is. It's not like my personal theory, but I've mentioned it a few times that I think these older players that get to just DH all the time, like David Ortiz, Nelson Cruz DHs a lot, it really helps them. It keeps them healthier,
yes,
and it keeps them productive. So I think that's a big bonus for him.
And it's a nice park shift for him.
Yeah. Now again, like Fenway for lefties, I don't think Yankee Stadium's so great for righties, but I don't know what his spray chart is like, Matt Holliday. But if he can go the other way, then that's just perfectly fine. And I even think Edinson Volquez could become streamable going to a park notwithstanding, because I know Kansas City is a good park for him. But now going to the Marlins, different league, just going to the National League, I think will help.
It depends.
Edinson Volquez was streamable. I think he stays streamable.
Yeah, I could see it being a slight upgrade.
Because it's National League?
Yeah, because right. It's National League. His strikeout rate will probably tick up after going down over the last couple of seasons. But then, on the other hand, we thought the same thing about Wei-Yin Chen, and he had a disastrous season with Miami last year. So it's certainly not a guarantee.
David Phelps, I think, was a lot better going to terrible.
Look, if Edinson Volquez gains 4 miles an hour on his fastball like David Phelps did.
Yeah, that would help. Okay, so let's pause from free agency a little bit and talk about the collective bargaining agreement. I'm going to give you some of the details, and you tell me how you feel about them. Smokeless tobacco ban for new baseball players.
That, I mean, it should just be for everyone?
Of course!
No!
Yes!
This is so dumb.
Yeah.
No! Go ahead.
This is so dumb.
Chris, Heath, whoever.
Well, I mean, I get it. You're laissez-faire, do whatever they want. I get it. But, like, if you're going to ban it for everyone.
Yeah.
They're not going to enforce it.
That's why it's so dumb.
Yeah.
They're not going to, tell somebody that comes to the plate with a dip in their mouth, take that out if you want to hit.
I don't know.
And if they do, I mean, this is a play. It's not like these guys are...
I think...
I don't know.
Content idea. the player on each team most likely to narc out rookies for true backup.
That's not a bad idea. I get that it is a public health concern, and it's what about the kids, and I understand that, but I don't think that they should be banning players from chewing tobacco if they want to.
I kind of do, because it's like, would you want an NBA player smoking a cigarette on the bench?
Look, I don't care. The 70s were a wild time.
Yeah, like they used to. I don't care. And the difference with that, I guess, is secondhand smoke. You can make a claim that them smoking a cigarette indoors might harm someone else.
Would you want them vaping?
I don't care.
Right. I don't know if I want anyone vaping, frankly.
Like, yeah. Why would I care?
It's just so weird. It's just a weird thing to allow in a sport. The other sports wouldn't even consider it. Nobody in other sports wants to dip. It's just so weird. When I was in college and I traveled with the baseball team, the UM baseball team, they were like dipping on the bus, and it's like, what? The cup that you're holding with all that brown spit is the single most disgusting thing on earth. What is the appeal of this? Why do you feel like
so,
just because?
But how is it? Why do you get any say?
Well, I don't get it. Why this doesn't need to happen? Like, yeah, if it's just a weird tradition in baseball. So if it weren't a tradition, I don't think baseball players would be like, "Oh, I got a dip." They do it because it's a tradition.
That is, it's one of the dumb traditions in baseball. Baseball's all about tradition, and players have always done it, and blah blah blah.
It's also like there is something enjoyable about chewing tobacco. There's a reason people do it.
Yeah, there's stuff enjoyable about drinking beer, I'm sure, but we don't let people do that.
On the baseball field, drink beer. Yes,
well, no, but like,
yeah. Oh, also golf. You can smoke cigarettes on the golf course.
Professional golfers?
Yeah. John Daly. You ever seen John Daly?
No, I don't do golf.
I'm just saying, like, you know, if Gary Sanchez was sitting there sipping a West Coast IPA
right.
on the bench.
But beer would make him a worse baseball player?
I don't know.
Tobacco most definitely makes him better.
Maybe.
This is fun.
It is a stimulant.
Maybe.
Okay. Next thing, the season will start earlier. We will have the same amount of games, but there will be some more off days. And I am happy about more day games for getaway games.
Bad for us.
What's that, Chris?
It's bad for us.
Why?
The season being longer is objectively worse for people who have to cover the league.
For me...
Like, let me have my first world problem. The baseball season is already too long.
Oh, way too long.
Basketball season is already way too long. And now we're adding days to both. It's just...
I'm sorry, Chris, that your job in sports is so difficult.
Thank you. Thank you for...
Have some tobacco.
Sincere concern.
Okay, next. This is great. Who could not like this? 10-day DL. No more 15-day DL. 10-day disabled list.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, that means a starting pitcher might only have to miss one start with an injury. All-star game. No longer determining home field advantage. Instead, baseball decided to become normal and award home field advantage to the team with the best record.
Every possible way that you avoid home field advantage in the World Series is going to be arbitrary and inherently unfair. It's a good thing home field advantage doesn't really matter.
Oh.
Hot takes all around. Hot takes all around.
You stunned me there. I think it matters.
Yeah.
No, it definitely matters more to some teams than others. And I think it would make sense for Chris to say that because there's not really a home field advantage for the Marlins. But for a lot of teams.
You're right. It is my primary motivation whether the Marlins get a home field advantage in the World
Series. For a lot of teams, home field advantage is like there's lots of people there and they're cheering and stuff.
The players feed
off of that. It's a different experience, baseball outside of South Florida.
It is weird that like there's all this outrage about the All-Star game deciding the home field advantage when it used to just literally be arbitrary. It used to just be random.
Oh, yeah, terrible. It's almost like people hated the BCS. And before that, I think the system was even worse.
Yeah, it was just like, all right, you're the champion now.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, it was pretty bad. Okay, and finally, players' meal money, daily meal money, decreasing from $105 per day to $30 per day.
Bad.
It's funny.
You know what? No, this is actually a bad thing, because players would often use their per diem to pay clubhouse staff. Like, that was every series they would give a
tip. So you
think
they're just not going to pay the clubhouse staff anymore?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's hilarious.
Why?
That we're giving somebody a $10 million contract and then $100 a day for food.
I agree.
That's hilarious.
They're getting meals provided to them like after the game, too.
Right.
30's a little low. Actually, have you guys ever had a per diem job?
No. I'm not fancy.
No.
You, Adam.
I have my first job. I was traveling for 3 to 4 months covering SEC football, and we had a $50 per diem. And we pocketed almost all of it. Like, I would buy fast food twice a day or whatever, you know? But I didn't really have any money then. I didn't have make $10 million. But the $50 was plenty. $105 a day for food? Are you kidding me? Ridiculous.
What I don't understand is like every
that's like a it's like a 3% bonus for a guy playing making the major league minimum though.
What I don't understand is like are they giving them an envelope with cash every morning?
No, I think they give it to them as part of their salary.
It's just on your check.
I would
say so. It's not affecting the clubhouse people at all.
It probably was.
I don't understand. Like that's not that
bad.
That just completely ruins the whole idea that they were using that money to tip people.
Well, they were.
It was just part of their check.
Yeah, but still, they're getting more money. I mean, they're basically taking a pay cut.
People don't
need $105.
Players got screwed in this CBA.
Oh, you think so?
They made every concession.
Well, they got rid of the draft pick compensation for players who were tendered, or at least the first
so
round pick.
Sure. which impacts 12 guys a year?
It's a pretty big deal, I think.
Yeah, I think it was a big deal.
For those 12 guys, yeah. Like, it's a big deal for Kyle Loesch 4 years ago. I don't know if it's that big of a deal on the whole.
They didn't have an international draft, so, well, they're trying to curb it a little bit, but I still think international players are going to get a lot of money when they come over. You know what? They've got it fine. They've got it fine, Chris. I'm sorry. Unfortunately, they don't have it as hard as you. With, you know, baseball season being longer now and your days being worse. But
it's tough. I'm just saying, like, you know, if they had asked the fantasy journalists, maybe this would have gone a different way.
Who is the biggest loser from the last couple of weeks? Fantasy loser.
Gene Segura.
Yep. That's exactly who I was thinking.
I know Chris Towers hates Gene Segura, but, like, I think this is objectively true.
Can't be a good thing, right?
I mean, he's probably going to run less and hit in a worse park.
Significantly worse
park. And he may turn back into Gene Segura.
There is concern about that.
Yeah. Now, I mean, I guess if you want to be completely literal, Tyler Thornburg will not be a closer anymore, so he's going to Boston. He's a huge loser. But, yeah, okay, here's the trade. Segura goes to Seattle along with relief pitcher Zach Curtis and Mitch Haniger, an outfielder. For Taijuan Walker and Ketel Marte. Brandon Drury is a winner here, right? I mean, they want to open up more at-bats for him. He's going to, you know, he could be their second baseman. That's cool.
So is Marte going to play every day at shortstop?
I'm not sure. I think my guess is they'd probably rather have Drury playing than Ketel Marte. But
okay.
Could be both, right?
Yeah.
I'd like to see Ketel Marte get another shot because I don't think he was bad enough to where you just give up on him.
Well, if anyone's proof of that, it's probably Gene Segura, right?
Right.
So
yeah, got a lot more chances.
Yeah, and you know he's not a power hitter, but he did hit for a pretty good amount of power last year, which was a little surprising. The park hurts. The stolen base thing is interesting, Heath, because you know why do you think he's going to run less? Because just philosophy of Scott Service.
Yeah, I don't think the Mariners ran anywhere as close to as much as the Diamondbacks did last year.
I think the Diamondbacks were third in stolen bases last year.
Mariners were 24th in attempts.
So, yes, that is why.
But is it a personnel thing, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't have Gene Segura. They didn't have Paul Goldschmidt.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think Ketel Marte ran as much as we thought he was going to when he was playing.
Yeah.
So, if you look at the home-road splits for Gene Segura, the batting average is pretty similar. 325 at home, 312 on the road. 12 home runs at home, 8 on the road. On base percentage was actually higher on the road, but the slugging was 61% or 61 points lower on the road than at home. So, you know, I don't know. I agree with you. I'm just playing devil's advocate here. if the steals don't go away, he stole 44 bases, or no, I'm sorry, he stole 33 bases. His career high is 44. If he can steal 30 bases again, I don't know. Is it really that big of a difference? Because like I said, the home road splits were pretty similar.
I think the thing with Gene Segura, and again, I'm not historically his biggest fan. He was a natural regression candidate already, given how much better he was last season than his career and how much different he was than his career. And I think this just makes it the regression more likely.
And I mean, we talked about his home road splits and how much better he was at home than on the road.
But he wasn't. He was not that much better. That's what I'm saying.
Well, his power numbers were.
That was the big difference.
His power. Yeah. He had 12 home runs at home and 8 on the road. He had like a ISO was about 50 points higher.
9 of those road games were at Coors Field.
And he had
where he had 425, 500, 625 with 5 doubles and a home run.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the doubles. Yeah, that's big. Only one homer. That's fair. And not a great place. Now, how about this? Who loses more, Gene Segura or Taijuan Walker?
Gene Segura has more to lose.
Yeah, I don't think Taijuan Walker loses much at all because the park's not good, but the shift from the American League to the National League sure is. And a fresh start, I think it's always, not always, almost always a good thing when we have a pitcher that we all believe is exceptionally talented, like we do believe Taijuan Walker is, that just hasn't quite put it together. And now a new pitching coach and a new staff is going to work with him. There's a better chance he figures it out.
The big thing, he needs a breaking ball. Like, his fastball is, at least last I saw, the swing strike rate on his fastball was one of the better ones in the majors. And when he's been good, it's been primarily that stretch he had last season. It was a lot of fastballs.
Right.
The splitter was good 2 years ago. It wasn't good last year. The curveball's never been good. He needs a secondary offering because he's got reverse split issues.
I'm not saying that he's necessarily going to be better or worse in Arizona. I just think his breakout potential, there's a slightly better chance that he reaches it this year.
Yeah,
he didn't have anything to lose.
I guess I'm just worried about him going to Arizona, not because of the home runs, and that's been a big problem for Taijuan Walker, but he gives them up everywhere. He gives up as many home runs at home as he does on the road. But just because, look at what happened to Zach Greinke, look what happened to Shelby Miller, Patrick Corbin regressed. Like, that organization kind of stinks right now. And I wouldn't want to, I feel bad for him.
Yeah. I'm kind of losing faith in Taijuan Walker in a lot of ways. But he's still worth a look.
Yeah. They have a new manager, too. They have a new coaching staff, so things could be different. Hopefully things will be better for the Diamondbacks. Let's do some more transactions here around baseball, unless there's more you want to talk about from that deal. I don't know. Is Brandon Drury going to be in your rankings? Top 20?
Eventually, yes. I don't know if top 20, but we rank 36 at each position, so yeah.
You're asking the wrong guy.
Yeah, he'll be in there.
Chris, why don't you make us some baseball rankings real quick?
He's going to be making them in the next days.
I've got so little going on, and I'm just choosing not to.
Really, Chris is our fantasy basketball guy who refuses to believe that Derrick Rose is any good. So let's go to the Big Apple. Let's talk about Yoenis Cespedes, 4 years, $110 million deal to stay with the New York Mets. And if you want to look at where he finished last year among outfielders, Cespedes was 30th in points leagues, 22nd in Roto, but only played 132 games. Give him 152 games. I didn't give him 162, but 152. Cespedes would have been a top 8 outfielder. And 2 years ago, 2015, Cespedes was a top 5 outfielder. So I had said on this podcast that I just fear that Cespedes is the kind of player that gets the big contract and doesn't perform. And the Mets seem to have that fear too. They gave him this deal. It's pretty fair, I think. What do you guys think about Cespedes? Do you value him as a top 10 outfielder?
No, not top 10, but that doesn't have anything to do with the fact that he just got a contract. He's a borderline top 12 guy, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Would you rather have Nelson Cruz or Cespedes, guys?
Probably Cespedes.
Yeah, I think that probably so. I haven't gotten too far into my rankings either. I'll say Cruz. I've got Cespedes 17th right now.
Okay. Chris, would you rather have Adam Jones or Cespedes?
Cespedes.
Heath has Jones two spots ahead right now.
Yep. And Cespedes will go, based on the mock drafts we've done, I think Cespedes will probably go 4 or 5 rounds earlier than Adam Jones.
Nobody wants Adam Jones at all.
So I might end up with, I might end up with both, but right. I'm definitely more likely to get Adam Jones at the price that he's going at right now.
Houston signed Carlos Beltran 1 year and $16 million. Beltran's going to be 40 years old in April. He hit 29 home runs last year. He played 151 games. Had a really bad August, but rebounded nicely and finished strong in September. Okay, guys, what do you think about Beltran in Houston?
Kind of a little bit bad for oh my God, somebody bail me out. The catcher, Evan Gattis.
Evan Gattis. Nice. Yeah, I don't know where they're going to play all these players that need to play DH. Yeah.
Josh Reddick also to Houston on a 4-year deal.
Right. I mean, you have to expect that Beltran's going to fall off a cliff any moment. He definitely took advantage of the short porch in right field at Yankee Stadium. Only played 50 games there last year, but hit 14 of his home runs there. Had an OPS of 961 at Yankee Stadium. He was good in Texas down the stretch too, but not anywhere close to that good. I don't think that Beltran probably plays every day, maybe 5 days a week. And I don't think he's as good as he was at Yankee Stadium, so he can't make up for that with being efficient.
But he's also someone that's going to be drafted really low.
Right. I probably won't. I don't know that I'm drafting Carlos Beltran.
Well, he is outfield eligible, right?
Yeah.
That's interesting. This guy was an all-star. And like I said, just had basically one bad month. I feel like you have to draft Carlos Beltran. I guess you don't.
I mean, somebody will. I just don't think I probably will.
Let me take a look at the three outfielder league draft we did recently and see where Carlos Beltran went.
Three outfielder league, I'm not so sure. But five outfielder, yes.
Okay, I'll take a look at both and see if Beltran got drafted. This was before he signed with the Astros. Now, what about Josh Reddick? So Josh Reddick finally gets to go to a hitter's park. That's nice. I'm not really a Reddick guy. In points leagues, maybe, because he walks, but I don't really believe in him as a hitter.
Like, you don't believe he exists?
Not really. No, I think it's like a totally different guy that gets his walk-up music.
Josh Reddick's really interesting because he's kind of fundamentally changed who he is as a hitter over the last couple of years, and last year he struck out 12.8% of the time, 11.2% of the time the previous year, but the power has largely, the power completely disappeared last year, really, and sub 200 ISO the year before. If he can find the power and maintain a low teens strikeout rate, which I feel like is what we said at the start of last season about him, he's someone who can really be good, but it's just... Yeah, a home run to fly ball ratio around 8% is not going to cut it.
I would definitely rather have Reddick than Beltran in a points league.
Okay.
In a roto league, it's pretty close.
Well, when you say that, though, you're basically counting on Beltran just not being that good.
I'm counting on, I don't think there's, I, not, I shouldn't say any chance. I think there's very little chance Beltran's as good as he was last year.
Yeah.
And like Reddick's not been useless in points leagues.
No, not at all. Beltran, by the way, went in the 19th round in the three outfielder league. I do not have the results for the five outfielder league, but it stands to reason he got drafted there as well. Beltran got drafted after Jose Soler, after Alex Gordon, just before Shinsu Chu. So Gordon, Soler, Beltran, Chu. That was the order.
Those all sound about right to me.
Okay.
Like I was thinking right around the 20th round for Beltran.
Yeah, you took Marcelo Ozuna a round later. Homer.
I'd much rather have Ozuna.
Yeah.
But he doesn't play in front of any fans.
That's true.
Yeah.
True.
Okay, more signings. Mark Melanson to the Giants, 4 years, $62 million. That's great. And I know that his strikeouts aren't what they used to be, but he still gets it done. Do you have any concerns about Mark Melanson?
Maybe in years 3 and 4 of the deal. Although he's not even that old. He's only like 31.
Yeah, I think it's be fine.
No, it should work out really nicely for him. And for San Francisco, who desperately needed a closer last year.
Let's see. Well, Matt Holliday. Okay, we can talk more about him with the Yankees. Would you rather have Holliday or Beltran?
Holliday.
Heath, Holliday or Beltran?
Beltran.
You notice that whenever I go to Heath or Chris, I tend to say the other person's name first. I confuse you guys.
Yeah.
That's really nice of you.
Maybe I'm overreacting to Matt Holliday. He seems just every bit as likely to go down the tube as Beltran this year.
I agree. I think I had no interest in Matt Holliday.
No.
And I had to fight Scott on this a lot because, you know, he had power last year. That was the weird thing. He hit 20 home runs in a short season.
Because he's hit at least 19 home runs in...
But he did it in 110 games last year.
11 straight seasons, except for one.
It was really weird. He had a 215 ISO, which was his highest since 2011.
Okay.
It was strange to see the power come back like it did.
Well, here's the...
I wouldn't say suspicious, but strange.
Look, 2 years in a row, Holliday had the same ground ball to fly ball ratio. And his home run to fly ball ratio went up from 5.1% to 14.9%. So it basically tripled. With the same amount of ground balls to fly balls, his home run to fly ball ratio tripled last year.
I would say the 5.1% was too low, or 7.5%.
No, it was 5.1. You're right. And that was a terrible year. He had a terrible 2015.
And look, he had a 17.9%. home run to fly ball ratio, which was his best since 2011, also like with the ISO. However, he also had a 38.5% hard hit rate, and that's another place that this guy is metronome-like consistency. He's been at 38 to 39% four out of the last 5 years. The lone year that he wasn't was 2015. I would imagine playing, getting the opportunity to DH in addition to
the evidence points to when players DH, they hit worse. Yeah, really? We did that study. Read it somewhere. I don't remember where it was now. I'm not going to be able to cite it.
Are you sure you read it somewhere?
I am positive.
Are you sure it wasn't nowhere?
Well, no, it was true somewhere. About Carlos Beltran last year. I just looked that up earlier today.
Yeah, I think it's been pretty well proven that the macro level players are worse when they DH.
I mean, there's probably an easy explanation for that.
Well, yeah, you've heard players talk about it. They don't like DHing. They like being
Can't
involved.
Keep their head in the game.
I think there's an easier explanation for that.
What?
Players tend to move to DH when they're older, and they tend to be worse when they're older. Like that.
No, what about players in the same season that play the field part of the time and DH part of the time and hit worse when they DH?
Players are also probably more likely to play DH when they're hurt or when they're ailing or when they're not 100%.
They gotta keep their head in the game, Chris.
Yeah,
keep
Chris, I'm gonna buy into the play. See, this is when I get into the arguments with the stats guys. Like, the players themselves acknowledge they don't like DHing. They like to be in the field. They like to be mentally engaged. They don't like sitting on the bench for three innings before they hit. And I'm gonna buy into that. But that said, I do think for an older guy, I think it keeps them healthy. That's a big thing for me. Guy who has had health problems, like Nelson Cruz, you know, DHing really benefits him.
So we think Holliday bounces back to a 270 hitter next year?
Sure.
And
you know, a lot of guys go to Yankee. This is more for lefties.
It's almost exclusively for lefties.
Right, and their batting average plummets. So I hope that doesn't happen to him. I have a feeling it won't.
There's not as much room for hits there as there is at Bush.
Sure.
Yeah, true. But in left field's huge there.
Which would not necessarily help his home runs.
Correct. Now, can somebody look up his spray chart, please? I feel like he's not a pull hitter.
I believe that's correct.
Last season, he hit 38% of his batted balls to the pull side. His career is 35%. The one outlier, again, 2015 when it was only 25%. So he is more of a pull hitter, but he's certainly not a dead
pull. But 38% is one-third. 5% more than.
Yes, but...
How many did he hit to the opposite field?
28%, or 33%.
That's not bad,
28%
right?
Last year.
This is Matt Holliday we're talking about here. Okay, anything else? Joaquin Benoit, is he going to be the Phillies closer?
Maybe.
Yeah, I don't have any idea on
that. I think he has a good chance to be the Phillies closer.
I mean, Jeanmar Gomez isn't exactly an unmovable piece there.
Right. Okay. Well, cool.
I do want to point out, I nailed the Rich Hill contract. I looked it up. I said 3 years, 45. Nailed
yep,
it.
You were right in between Scott and I, so...
Nailed it.
That'll be interesting. It'll be really interesting to see where he's drafted, to see if he can... What are we hoping for, 150 innings? Or is that high?
I think I'd take that.
Yeah, you're hoping for 180. You're expecting 100.
Okay.
Yeah, Rich Hill with the contract, go back to the Dodgers. And reading here, MLBTradeRumors.com, Hector Neris, Jeanmar Gomez, Pat Neshek, Joaquin Benoit, all names there. I guess any of those four. This is me paraphrasing, but CSN Phillies, Jim Salisbury. Okay, this is me paraphrasing. Any of those four has a chance, but CSNPhilly.com's Jim Salisbury seems to think that Neris and Gomez have better chances than Neshek and Benoit to close. But you know what? It's silly to speculate now. It's going to be performance-based, and Benoit's not bad.
You're not going to draft any of them in the first 20 rounds?
No, that's Roto League, one of the cheapest closers you get. Yeah. Emails? Yeah. Right? Now, emails? Yeah?
Yes.
Cool. Let's do some. These emails are I'm going to tell you the truth, people. They're a little boring because they're all, I hate do not like keeper questions, but I understand this is the time of the year to get them in. So let's help people out. Let's help our loyal listeners. This is Greg from Ohio. Dear Matt, Jake, and Dallas.
I'm hoping that's Dallas McPherson.
Nah, it's not. Mm. These are bearded pitchers, Shoemaker, Arrieta, and Keuchel.
Okay.
Here we go. Take out your pens and papers. 12-team mixed roto league with OBP and quality starts.
I'm lost.
$260 budget. I can keep five of the following players. The following are $1 players. Kyle Hendricks, Lance McCullers, Sean Manaea, Tanner Roark, David Dahl, and Jose Ramirez. We have a $3 Daniel Murphy, a $12 Ryan Braun, $15 Carlos Gonzalez, $19 Cueto, $22 Cano, and $30 Scherzer.
I think I'm loading up on dollar pitchers. I'm probably going Daniel Murphy, and then Kendricks, McCullers, Roark, and I'll go Dahl. So not really loading up. 3 out of 5.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going that way at all.
you just spent $7 on five players, Chris.
That's good.
That's really efficient.
Yeah.
Thrifty fella.
Let's just hope that everybody else didn't keep all the good players so you can spend your money on something.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep Scherzer for sure.
$30.
I'm going to keep Dahl. I'm going to keep Hendricks.
Those are $1 players.
I'm going to keep Murphy.
$3.
So you went in the exact same direction I did, except you kept an expensive.
And I'm probably going to keep Braun.
$12. Yeah. Okay. So get some $1 guys in there.
Yeah, I think Hendricks and Dahl are the easy ones.
Yeah, I agree. Those stood out. And I think Daniel Murphy at $3 is pretty easy, too.
Yeah.
Next question is from... Oh, no name here. Guys, give me a name.
Shane.
Shane?
Shane.
Okay. Dear Adam et al., let me cut to the chase. I'm desperate for help. Help. I'm in a 14-team roto league. It's a dynasty league, and my team has been pretty bad the last few years, and I don't have a clue which players I should keep. So he needs 8 keepers with OBP, but stolen bases and homers are more heavily weighted. Saves and wins are more heavily weighted. 3 outfielder league and only 1 catcher. Keep 8. Okay, here we go. Votto, Wilson Contreras, Odor, Eduardo Nunez, Jackie Bradley, Javier Baez, Aledmys Diaz, Michael Brantley, Orlando Arcia, and then we've got Andrew Miller, Rick Porcello, Aaron Sanchez, and Dallas Keuchel. So he's keeping Votto. He needs 7 more.
Odor, Bradley and Brantley.
And Diaz. And Porcello and Keuchel?
I was going to say Porcello and Sanchez.
And Sanchez.
I'd rather have Sanchez than Keuchel.
I think I'd rather have Keuchel than Porcello. Is that bold?
Yes.
They're all kind of, I mean, they're all going to be mediocre number 3 or 4s.
You know, Odor was the one that was like absolutely no doubt about it to me.
And I think Diaz and Bradley too.
I don't know about Bradley. That guy is streaky as hell.
Yeah.
Well, so is Odor.
Is he?
Exceptionally.
Yes. This is Heath's hobby horse. This is his.
You don't read my.
I read the first one you wrote, and I know he had a bad first month.
And then he was fantastic, like right after I wrote it for about 2 months. And then he was awful for another month. And then he was good again.
Sounds like a baseball player to me. Baseball's really hard.
Yeah, I know. Bradley,
very consistent, Heath.
Bradley, I just don't know. Bradley scares me a little bit. I'm not sure how much Jackie Bradley I'm going to have on my team.
I definitely want Michael Brantley, though. And I prefer him in a league where I'm redrafting because I think his price is going to be cheap. And he's a guy who was a borderline first rounder 2 years ago, right?
Well, in his breakout year, he was, I think, a top 3 outfielder. In fact, he might have been number 1 in
I think
points
he was
leagues.
A top 3 hitter that year.
Yeah, he is more of a points league guy. His contact is amazing and doesn't strike out much. But in terms of like the home run steal combination, it's good. It's not going to be elite. Or maybe it will. It's, you know, maybe he'll hit 50 home runs now because it's baseball. But yeah, no, I like that. I'm just saying stuff about him. Next email from Chris. Good morning, Dion, Peter, Jameis, and Alvin.
Those are
Miami Hurricanes
players from the best football school in Florida.
That's a really disgusting thing to say. If and when he gets posted.
Objectively true, though.
Well, right now it is. Historically it isn't.
Last decade.
Last decade, oh, yeah, not, but.
Yeah, Tebow.
Now, last decade, the Gators have been 2 national championships.
Yeah, Hurricanes are probably like 4th.
UCF's been to more BCS games.
I think that's true. They've definitely won more.
Okay.
How mad is he?
You know what, guys? I don't appreciate what's happening right now. the question is about Ohtani, Shohei Ohtani. I don't know how to pronounce his name. Japanese superstar. If and when he gets posted, probably next season, what do you project for him as a pitcher and a hitter? Where would he rank at each?
Totally impossible to say. I would guess that he would rank higher as a pitcher. I feel like it's easier to translate, and I would hope that he comes over as a pitcher.
But what if he already speaks English?
He's also, for the most part, been better as a pitcher. He's been really up and down as a hitter, which kind of makes sense. Feels like it's a lot harder to be good full-time as a hitter, part-time as a hitter, than it is as a pitcher.
Also, like, the second question was about like him being a hitter and a pitcher. Baseball teams are not fun like that.
That's never happened.
He's not going to play the field when he doesn't pitch or do anything that might be kind of fun.
If he comes over as a hitter, I wonder if they would consider using him as a reliever.
No.
I just say it. That would be
Why would they do that?
You need a big out in the 7th inning. You go to your great pitcher,
and then you can put him back in the outfield. No, it took teams 100 years to start using shifts regularly. Baseball, no, it's not going to happen.
Okay. Last email is from Brett in Lowell, Michigan. Can we start with the PS of this email?
Sure.
Because Heath rejected my argument on this. In fact, Heath probably called me stupid. I think he said it was a stupid argument because Heath is very abusive to me.
I've never once called you a name or used the word stupid describing you.
No, it was describing my argument, I think. But it was the Die Hard argument. Because the P.S. on this is from Brett. He says, P.S. Die Hard is a Christmas movie.
Yeah, it's true.
No, it's not true. So
This is the stupidest argument any human being has ever made.
I want you to think about this. Chris, I'm going to let you have to think about this, okay?
Okay.
You own the last Blockbuster video store in the world. And it is your job to stock the shelves with their appropriate movies. And there
I
are
would
three...
think if you owned it, you'd hire somebody else to do that, but go ahead.
No, it's not a money-making prop.
It's a real, I'm a real salt of the earth guy.
Right.
You own Blockbuster. You're going out of business. You don't have money for an employee. So anyway, you have to put the movies where they need to be. You have three aisles, okay? One is comedy. One is action. One is Christmas.
This is the worst video store.
Yeah, that's why you're going out of business. So you've got comedy,
but
action,
how is the last one still in business?
You've got comedy, action, and Christmas. In your hand, you have two DVDs or Blu-rays.
No, you only have two DVDs as well in your hand.
Yeah, no,
keep
just
going.
These two.
Well, I mean, at least I've upgraded the DVD.
One of them is Home Alone.
Okay.
One of them is Die Hard. You can only put them on one shelf because you only have one copy. Where are you putting Home Alone and where are you putting Die Hard?
I'm an enterprising sort of Blockbuster store owner. I'm really trying to turn things around. So I'm probably doing like its own display of like,
where are you putting the two movies? You have no choice but to put them in here.
So your argument is that no, have you ever seen the movie Hot Fuzz?
Parts of it.
Is that are you putting that in comedy or action?
I couldn't.
What about Shaun of the Dead?
Shaun of the Dead is a comedy.
What about Ghostbusters?
Ghostbusters is a comedy.
What about like Love Actually? Or
so that's a good one. If you had to put Ghostbusters into comedy or sci-fi, which one would you put it in?
Comedy.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's a comedy with sci-fi elements, just like Die Hard is an action movie with Christmas elements.
Sure, but if it took place at the sci-fi portion of the year, I would not put it in the sci-fi. I would put it in the sci-fi portion.
No, but it's June, okay? Let's say
the better question, Chris, I have a different one, okay? Have you ever heard a worse scenario for trying to decide what type of movie
I think it's terrific
is.
And you won't even answer the question. That's how you know it's good. You don't even have the guts to answer the question because you know the answer is action.
It's the most convoluted hypothetical question I've ever heard in my life.
It's a very relevant question. It makes you think about the true essence of the movie Die Hard, which
I answered the question when you asked it.
I mean, movies,
I said they're both Christmas movies.
Movies can be both. No, like movies can be two things
because there's like five Christmas movies that are solely about Christmas.
Well, Home Alone is a funny movie.
Love Actually is a Christmas movie, but it's also all kinds of things.
Yeah, Home Alone is a funny movie, but it is a true Christmas movie. It is about Christmas. Die Hard is about a terrorist taking over Nakatomi Plaza. It happens to be set on Christmas. It's not a Christmas movie.
What's the one with the guy and he dies and he talks like that?
What?
It's a Wonderful Life. Is that it?
Oh, I've never seen it.
That's a Christmas movie.
You don't get to judge Christmas movies if you've never seen It's a Wonderful Life. Are you kidding me?
That movie stinks. But either way, it has the same themes as Die Hard.
Oh, it has a terrorist taking over Nakatomi Plaza?
Kind of.
All right. Well, then I should see it.
Not exactly an uplifting Christmas story for most of the time. But
speaking of a Christmas story,
it's about a guy who's trying to get back to his family. After he's, it's the same thing.
Die Hard is absolutely not about John McClane trying to get back to his family.
It absolutely
is.
Yep.
That is so.
Plus, any movie that has the guy who played Carl Winslow in Family Matters is by definition a Christmas movie.
Well, that's a great argument. Okay, so now you win. All right, last question here. 10 keeper league with no penalties for keepers or slotting. The offer on the table. He says, "Hey, Hillary, John, and Mitt. I know them." The offer on the table is me giving up Harper. Oh, okay. It's a trade. He would give up. Harper, Seager, Kyle Seager, Carlos Martinez, and Edwin Diaz. All right, he's giving up Harper, Kyle Seager, Carlos Martinez, and Edwin Diaz. He's getting Correa, Bumgarner, and Strasburg.
I wouldn't do it.
My head is going to explode.
I wouldn't do it. I think it's pretty easy, actually. And I think the big thing is that Strasburg is too much of a question mark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel that.
I mean...
Like, you're going to say Carlos Martinez is a question mark, fine, but he's the third player in the deal. I wouldn't do this one.
I wouldn't either.
I probably wouldn't, just because my brain can't even process the entire thing right now. So,
Chris, you never answered the question. What aisle?
I did answer the question.
What did you say?
I said that I would set up
no,
a
special you didn't
section. In the front of the store. This is how things work.
You did not answer the question because
you need
can't.
To draw people to a certain part of the store. You don't expect them to find it on their own.
There are three shelves at the store. They're going to find it.
I'm, like I said, I'm a real salt of the earth.
Yeah, that means you know you lost the argument.
Handy kind of guy.
You know you lost the argument.
I'm going to build another place where I can display these movies.
This is why it was a good argument, because you can't answer it without this sarcasm, because you're running away from the true answer.
I already answered it and said Christmas aisle.
Well, that's why your store is going out of business. I don't know what to tell you.
It's Amazon's fault.
Good show, guys. Hooray for us.
See you Thursday.
We need Scott back. Things are going crazy. Things got haywire. For Heath and Chris, I'm Adam. Talk to you hopefully later this week with another episode.